Here are 7 mistakes dentists make when buying a dental practice. Waiting too long to get started. For some reason, a lot of dentists wait years and years before even getting started looking to find a dental practice to buy. I think it's rooted in fear that they're not going to be ready and that they're not going to know what they're doing. But every additional month that you wait to become an owner, you're leaving thousands of dollars on the table. The average associate dentist makes about $200,000 a year. The average owner, on the other hand, makes more like $350,000 a year. So if you do the math, that comes out to more than $10,000 a month that you are leaving on the table by working as an associate. I completely understand not buying a practice the instant you graduate from school. I mean, I didn't even buy a practice till I was a year out of school. It was like 13 or 14 months. So I don't expect everyone to buy a practice the instant they graduate. But the longer you wait, the longer you're going to be missing out on the opportunity to be making the money that owners make. What if someone told you you could be making $12,000 extra per month and you wouldn't even have to work any more hours? That's literally the deal with being an owner. You're going to be making substantially more money and you're not going to be even working harder. In fact, I went from working 5 days a week as an associate to working 3 days a week as an owner. Now, I did do some business things on the other days, but overall, I was still working fewer hours and making substantially more money. Now, when you buy a dental practice, you're going to generally take out a loan to finance the purchase. The sooner you get started on buying a practice, the sooner you're going to get that loan paid off. If you wait around until you're 40 years old to buy your first practice, you're not going to have that loan paid off till you're 50. But if you buy your practice when you're 30, your loan is going to be paid off when you're 40. That's 10 years sooner because you became an owner sooner. Finally, you don't know when the practice that you're going to want to buy is going to come to market. Especially if you have a limited geographical area in which you want to live, you need to start looking for a practice right away because you don't know when a practice in the area you're living is going to come for sale. Wouldn't it be unfortunate to start looking for a practice and find out, well, the ideal practice in the perfect location just sold a month before you started looking? The reality is, even if you don't think you're ready to become an owner yet, it makes sense to go ahead and start reaching out to practice brokers and talking to other dentists and reaching out to supply reps, because you don't know when the practice that you're going to want to buy is going to be available. It's extremely unlikely that the moment that you decide you want to be an owner, there's going to be the perfect practice for you to buy right away. It's going to take time. Generally, it takes 6 to 12 months for dentists to find the right practice once they start looking. So I bought my practice 1 year out of school, which was perfect. So if you want to buy a practice 1 year out of school and it takes about a year to find a practice, that means as soon as you graduate, you should begin reaching out to brokers and starting to look at practices. This doesn't mean that you're going to have to buy a practice right away, but the sooner you start looking, the better. You're not going to want to buy the first practice you look at. It would be like if you went to buy a house and the first house you walked into, you said, I'm going to buy this house. You want to look at a bunch of different practices to get an idea of what kind of things you want in a practice. And because practices don't come to the market nearly as often as houses, when you go to look for a house, there might be 1,000 houses for sale in the town that you live in. But when you look for a practice, there might be 0 available right then, maybe 1 or 2, depending on how big the city or the location you're looking at is. But you can't just pick one weekend and go look at 20 different practices. You have to do it. You have to spread it out over a year or two. And so just start looking right away because you don't know when you're going to find the right practice. Not looking hard enough. I can't tell you how many times I've heard dentists say, well, I would become an owner. I would buy a practice, but there's nothing for sale in my town that I want to live in. Like there's no options. And I ask them, well, what have you done to look for practices? And they say, well, I've just been kind of keeping my ear open, just listening to see what doesn't make any sense. And occasionally you'll talk to someone like, well, I reached out to a practice broker, and he's going to show me some practices. If you are only reaching out to one practice broker, you are going to only see the practices that one broker has for sale. See, the practice broker is working for the seller and they are going to be paid on commission when they sell those practices. They are absolutely not going to say, oh, well, my friend, this other practice broker has a practice for sale. I want you to go look at his practice. No, they're only going to tell you about the practices that they have listed for sale themselves. In most areas, there's going to be at least 5, 6 different practice brokers. If you live in a big city, there might be 10 or 12 or 15 practice brokers for your area. And you want to reach out to every single practice broker you can find because they're all going to have different practices listed for sale. I did another video that I'll link in the description where I went through 24 different ways to find dental practices for sale. If you're looking for a practice, I definitely recommend checking that video out, because there are so many different ways you can find practices for sale. And if you're not doing at least 10 of those ways, then you're not trying hard enough. Buying the wrong size of dental practice. It should be obvious, but not every dental practice is the same. I like to group practices into three categories: small, medium, and large. Small are the practices that are producing under 600,000. Medium is 600 to 1.2 million, and large is 1.2 million and above. The size of practice you buy is going to have a dramatic effect upon what your life is like working at this practice. If you are used to working in a high-speed corporate environment where you're seeing 30, 40, 50 patients a day, and then you buy a practice that's doing $300,000 a year, and you come in and you only have two patients on your schedule, you're going to be bored out of your mind. You're not going to be making the kind of money that you were wanting to make. You're going to quickly find out that you're going to have to be spending a lot of time marketing and advertising, trying to bring new patients into the practice. And maybe that's something you enjoy. Maybe you like the idea of growing a practice, and this is exciting for you. You like marketing, you like social media, you have ideas. If that's you, then yeah, it can be a good idea to buy a small practice and grow it up. But if your goal is to come in and produce and actually make money starting out right away, then you're going to need to buy a bigger practice. On the other end of the spectrum, if you don't like working fast, if you want to be able to take your time on procedures, you're less worried about money and you're more interested in the kind of treatment you're able to provide for your patients, then you might want to look at a smaller practice. Maybe you don't want to have to deal with insurance and you want to have a fee-for-service type practice. Well, then you're probably going to want to be looking at smaller practices, because if you buy a big 1.2, 1.5 million dollar practice that's filled with all sorts of insurance patients and it's going to require you to see 40 patients a day to keep up with the previous doctor's production, and you come in and you say, well, I only want to see 5 or 6 patients a day, well, then you're going to have a huge drop in production and you just dramatically overpaid for a practice. Also, if you're the entrepreneurial type who's interested in buying a smaller practice and growing it, you got to be careful if you buy a practice that's too big starting out, because you're not going to have enough time to work on the business side of growing the practice. You're going to just be with patients all day long. And you might have got into ownership because you wanted to have a little bit more time and control. If you're not careful, you might end up buying yourself a job where you have to see 30, 40 patients a day when you don't want to. Sure, in a bigger practice, you're going to be making a lot more money than if you buy a smaller practice. But if that's not something that you care about, then maybe you shouldn't be buying a big practice. It's perfectly all right to say that you're happy making $150,000 a year, but only working 2 days a week. You just need to be thinking about these type of things before you buy a practice, because if you buy the wrong size of practice, it's very much going to set up how your business is going to be run. Now, if you buy a large practice, you know, doing $1 million plus, you're probably going to have an associate or two working at that office with you. And that's going to be a completely different type of environment than being a solo doctor. You need to think about, do you want to manage a large team of a lot of people? When you're managing a group practice, whether it's multiple doctors in one building or spread out over multiple locations, there's just going to be a lot more management and a lot more drama with employees. The more employees you have under your roof, the more drama that's going to come with that. If you're the type of person who enjoys managing staff and being in charge of larger groups of people, well, then yeah, maybe you should look at larger practices. But if you know yourself and you know that you're more comfortable in a smaller environment with fewer employees to have to worry about, more of a lifestyle type practice, then maybe you want to go a little smaller. Ignoring hygiene size. I get it. I'm a dentist. Dentists like to think about treatment. You're buying a practice and you're thinking about crowns, you're thinking about implants, you're thinking about endo, you're thinking about surgery. Naturally, when you meet with the selling doctor and you start looking at practices, you're going to be asking questions about the surgery, about the dentistry. But the thing you got to keep in mind, when you buy a practice, unless it's a situation where the selling dentist is going to stay on after the sale, generally the seller is going to be gone. All the work that he was doing is going to cease. You are going to be taking over that practice, and the thing that's going to remain are the patients. The best way to know how many patients are at a practice is by looking at the hygiene schedule. There's multiple ways you can do this, and definitely I would recommend trying to use as many ways as possible and take the average so you get an idea of what things are actually like. You can look at how many exams were done. You can look at how many radiographs were taken. You can look at the actual physical calendar and see how many patients are scheduled to come back in the next 6 months. Basically, you're just trying to get an estimate of how many patients are on the hygiene schedule, scheduled to come back, that you're going to be able to look at and treatment plan things on. Let's say you have multiple practices that you're looking at and you're just trying to quickly compare them. What's the quickest way you can figure out how many patients are at this practice? Right off the bat, the easiest thing to do is look at the number of recall exams that were done in the last year and then divide that by two. Sure, there are going to be some patients that are going to come in for limited exams, but there's also going to be attrition. There's going to be patients that are leaving the practice when you take over. That's just a natural part of it. So the way I look at it, generally the patients that are coming in for limiteds, et cetera, and new patients are going to kind of balance out with the attrition that you experience. So if you look at the number of recall exams that were done in the last year, divided by two, that's going to give you an idea of how many patients are at that practice. If you have a general idea of how much dentistry you're able to produce per patient, you can then times your production number by the number of patients and get a pretty decent idea of how much money you're going to be able to make at this practice in the first year. If you know that you can produce $1,000 per patient, and there have been 2,000 recall exams in the previous year, then you can be pretty confident that there's 1,000 active patients. 1,000 times 1,000 is 1,000,000. So you're going to be doing $1,000,000 in revenue your first year of owning that practice. Now, 1,000 is actually on the high end. That's if you're pretty good in doing a lot of specialty procedures. The average dentist is probably going to be producing more like 500, 600, maybe 700 per patient. So if the office has 1,000 patients, you're looking at 700,000 in revenue. So if you see a practice that's selling for $1.2 million, but there's only 500 patients on the schedule, and you know that you generally can produce $750 per patient, well, then you're dramatically overpaying for a practice of that size. Don't make the mistake of thinking that the hygiene portion of your practice is not important. Not looking at the previous doctor's procedure mix. Hands down, when I'm looking at practices, the first thing that I want to look at is the production per procedure report. You need to get an idea of if the previous doctor was doing primarily general dentistry or specialty procedures. If you primarily like to do general dentistry, crowns, fillings, extractions, exams, and you buy a practice where the other dentist was doing, you know, tons of ortho and implants and all these extra specialty procedures that you're not comfortable doing, that's probably not a great practice for you to buy. You can learn so many things about a practice by looking at the production per procedure report. For starters, you can simply look over it and see if the selling dentist was doing more general dentistry or specialty procedures. Of course, you want to make sure that if the selling dentist was doing a bunch of implants or ortho, that you're comfortable also doing those procedures, or else there's going to be a drop in production. But on top of that, there are a lot of things that you can learn by looking at the previous doctor's procedure mix. One of the top things to look at is how many crowns the dentist did versus fillings. If the dentist was doing a lot of crowns but very few fillings, that's a bad sign. That likely means that the seller was over treatment planning crowns. Ideally, you want to find a practice where the seller had been doing a bunch of large amalgams, MODBLs, that are later going to get recurrent decay, that cusps are going to be fracturing off, and patients are going to be coming back to get the crowns put on those teeth. If the previous dentist had already gone through an over-treatment plan and replaced anyone who had a larger filling than an MOD with a crown before you even get there, then there's not going to be much treatment left for you to do. And then, probably most importantly, you want to make sure that the selling dentist wasn't doing any type of funny business. I mean, I've seen dentists that are doing skincare, selling various creams and lotions, Botox treatment, replacing crowns that don't have decay, but just doing it for aesthetic reasons, various types of laser treatments, doing bone grafts on every single extraction, even when it's not necessarily needed. Also, some dentists will just completely make up codes. It might be like D9999 in the system or something strange like that, because they're trying to find ways to charge the patient extra because they're not happy with their reimbursement rates from the insurance. I'm not here to judge if you want to try to charge patients extra. That's between you and the contract you sign with the insurance company. But you just want to make sure that if you're buying a practice and the production has been elevated because the dentist had been finding unique and interesting ways to charge the patient, You want to make sure that you're either comfortable doing the same thing the seller was doing, or you have an idea of other ways to grow the practice to replace the income that the seller was getting through those questionable methods. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with doing skincare and Botox and fancy laser treatments at your office. You just want to make sure that it's something you actually believe in and it's something that you're going to be able to do. Ignoring the insurance mix. A practice's insurance mix has a massive impact on what it's like to work at that practice and what type of income you're going to be able to expect per patient. A practice that sees Medicaid and HMO patients is going to be entirely different from a practice that sees PPO patients or cash paying patients. So the implications of whether patients are going to be staying at that practice is affected by what type of insurance they have. There's really three main groups. Let's start off with cash paying patients. If you're looking at an office where the selling doctor had only been taking cash and not been taking insurance, that's somewhat of a risky practice to buy. I completely understand why that would be appealing to have a practice where you're not taking insurance, or at least you're not in network with insurance companies. That way you can charge whatever fee you want and the patient has to pay it or they'll go somewhere else. But while that's a benefit, that's also the problem with these practices is that patients can go somewhere else. If a patient is paying cash, that means they can literally go to any dental office in the entire world. There is no reason that they have to stay at your practice. Sure, if you've been there for 20 years and you've built up relationships with these patients and they're coming specifically to see you because they know you, they trust you, they like you, then it might make sense to switch to only cash because the patients want to see you so badly that they're willing to pay a little bit extra to do it. But if you buy a practice from a dentist who has built up these relationships over the past 20 years, and then you come in and the patients don't know you, and they say, well, I don't know this new dentist, but I know I can go across the street and it's gonna cost half as much, and they actually take my insurance, they are networked with my insurance plan, and I'm just gonna go over there to get the work done. That's why it's risky to buy one of these types of practices, especially if you're in a more congested city-like area. Now, if you're in the middle of nowhere, and there are no other practices for 50 miles around you, and the previous dentist wasn't taking insurance, maybe you can come in and take that practice and the transition will be just fine. But if you're in a city where the dentist before you had really been a personality and had gotten to know a lot of patients and was able to charge a premium for that, you coming in as a new dentist likely won't be able to charge that same premium. On the other end of the spectrum are HMO and Medicaid practices. With an HMO, or sometimes they'll call them DMO practices in dentistry, the patients are assigned to an office and it can be kind of a hassle to switch the offices that they're going to. Similar with Medicaid, oftentimes patients are assigned to certain practices and there really aren't that many offices that are taking Medicaid patients or HMO patients. And so if you take over a practice that has a high number of HMO and Medicaid patients, chances are those patients are going to be staying because they don't have that many other options. The issue though is that these plans often don't have very good reimbursement rates. Sometimes they're absolutely terrible reimbursement rates. When I took over my practice, the dentist before me had been seeing some HMO patients. And on the first day that I got there, I had patients on my schedule for crowns and buildups, and I was only going to be receiving $250 for the crown and the buildup. Once you factor in the cost of lab work and materials, you're basically making nothing for doing a crown. Now, to be fair, you do receive a certain amount of money per month for HMO patients. I think it was like $7 or $8 a patient. But overall, it just did not make sense to be seeing these patients. The reimbursement rates were just so low that it wasn't worth my time and I didn't want to mess with it. Finally, the third group is the standard commercial PPO insurance plans. With PPO plans, no matter what dentist the patient goes to, they're going to be paying the same price. The price might not be as much as you would like it to be. It's definitely going to be more than the HMO and Medicaid plans. But the big advantage when you're buying a practice is that those patients aren't going to be motivated to go to another dentist unless they just really don't like you. Because if they go to another dentist, they're not going to be saving any money. There's actually a chance they'll be paying more because they might have to do a comp exam, which they've already done, and they can't charge you insurance twice, etc. So patients generally stay if they're on PPO plans, and they generally have high enough reimbursement rates that it's worth seeing those patients and you can still make good money. So just make sure when you're buying a practice that you're looking at what types of insurance the patients are taking and take this seriously. Also, don't just take the practice broker's word for these types of things, because I've seen practice brokers straight up lie about the percentages for insurance. Make sure that you are getting into the computer system and actually seeing what percentage of patients are in which insurance plan. not getting help. I think it might come back to when you're in school, you can't cheat on an exam. If you ask a friend for help, that's counted as cheating. And they think, now that I'm out of school, I need to do everything by myself. I'm on my own. I can figure this out. If you made it through dental school, you're a really smart person and you are smart enough to figure out how to buy a practice. But do you really want to spend the time and make those mistakes when you can talk to someone else who's already learned how to do those things and made those mistakes so that you don't have to? You're going to be buying the most expensive thing that you've ever bought in your life and probably will be the most expensive thing you ever buy. The seller of the practice is likely paying a practice broker something like $50,000 to $100,000 to represent them in this deal. This is a situation where it doesn't make sense to try to do it on your own. Probably more than any other decision you make in your life, maybe other than marriage, the practice that you buy is going to dramatically affect the quality and the condition of your future. If you buy the right practice, you're going to be setting yourself up for some incredible success. But if you buy the wrong practice, you're potentially going to be setting yourself up for the next 5-10 years of some really, really difficult times. If you have friends that have recently bought a practice, make sure you're reaching out to them, taking them out to lunch, asking them as many questions as you can. Don't be afraid to go online and ask questions on forums. And ultimately, you're going to want to hire some people to help you. Remember, on average, owner dentists make $12,000 more per month. If you can work with someone who's going to help you get into ownership even 1 month sooner, that's worth $12,000 for you. Also, if someone helps you from buying the wrong practice, they could potentially be saving you hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars. So I hired a practice coach during my first year of ownership. He was a dentist who had some success on his own and he was helping other people. I ended up paying in like $20,000 to $30,000 or something that first year. But I went from making $200,000 a year as an associate to making $700,000 my first year of ownership. When you look at it that way, it really does not make sense to try to do everything on your own. If someone comes up to you and says, hey, I'll give you $100,000 if you give me $10,000, obviously you're going to take that trade. When you hire someone to help you buy a practice, that's literally the trade you're making. All right, make sure to check out the description. I'm going to leave a link to the practice evaluation checklist. It's a list that you can follow when you're looking at practices that helps you identify what are the key things you need to be looking at when you're looking at practices. Also, I'm going to leave a link to that video that I was talking about that looks at 24 different ways to buy a dental practice. Lastly, you'll find my email in the description. If you have any questions relating to buying a practice, looking for practices, feel free to reach out to me. I love getting questions. Also, feel free to leave any questions you have in the comments. Let's go out and find a dental practice to buy.